Hello, people, and welcome back to the Out of Bounds podcast. We are back again after like a month and a half, I think. Anyways, it feels like 10 years, but we are back, and we are back with regular cast. We've got Kojo. How are you doing?
I'm good, man. New year. So, new adventures, new opportunities. So, I'm in a pleasant mood.
And we've got Abbas, returning members. So, how are you doing?
Can't complain. Chelsea are waiting.
I can't complain. If I start on Chelsea, I won't even start. And we are back with Out of Bounds legend himself, Gabriel. How are you doing?
Happy to be back. Let's get it.
Yeah. So obviously, we've been gone for a while, but sports has never stopped. And there's been a huge debate on social media because KDB has returned back from injury and he got a goal and he got an assist to bring Man City back from 2-1 down against Newcastle. And it sparked a bit of who is the greatest midfielder in the Premier League, because I think a lot of people have now said it's undoubtedly KDB. And I wanted to get you guys' take on that. Is KDB the greatest midfielder of all time, or would you still go with the names like Scholes, Lampard, or Gerrard, even though Gerrard should never be in the conversation, and those guys? You're nodding your head, you're shaking your head, Abbas. I'll let you go first.
Do you know what? I'm with it. I think you could put KDB as probably the greatest midfielder because he has the full package. And on top of that, he came into this league with probably the least expectation compared to the others, and he's delivering, and the consistency in when he delivers compared to others is probably ridiculous. And he has more of a full package compared to the other guys. And I always say this a lot. Nostalgia kills our people. Paul Scholes, Frank Lampard, Steven Gerrard. Nostalgia kills our people. Like, it's all right to appreciate the guys that we currently have and say that, yes, they can be better than the guys that we used to love growing up and watching. So, yeah, no, I'm all right with KDB being the greatest midfielder of all time. And then, on top of that, if he goes and wins a fourth Premier League title and becomes that instrumental figure that we expect him to be, breaking another record, being the first part of a team that wins four in a row, like, it's undoubtable to a point. Another guy that he threw in the mix is probably Yaya Toure, because of what he was able to give Manchester City when they started this project. But outside of that, I think, yeah, I'm all right with calling Kevin De Bruyne the best midfielder the Premier League's ever had.
Are we just going to gloss over that? Where did your Toure come from?
I've been baffled by that.
But sometimes nostalgia needs to respect our people as well. And Yaya, I think genuinely, I'm surprised when they say like the best midfielders of all time, etc., etc. Yaya just doesn't put in the conversation at times, and I don't get why.
I'm just saying
he should be in that pool. When we talk about Premier League midfielders, for some reason, it's always Lampard, Scholes, Gerrard. Just because it's an Premier League doesn't mean it has to be English players.
With your Toure, I'll make a case that you could say he's probably the greatest African midfielder to ever play in the Premier League, but not in like one or like, let's say, top three. I don't think he's in that sort of echelons, in my opinion, personally. But look, I agree with KDB stance. I do think for me right now, he probably is the greatest midfielder to ever play in the Premier League. I think he surpasses Steven Gerrard, personally. Frank Lampard, for me, I like Kevin De Bruyne a bit more, the way he plays the game. I think how impactful he is that we've seen over the last, 4 to 5 years at City. I think when we think of Kevin De Bruyne, I think one of the biggest criticisms we have really is his big game moments. But for City, you can't really say he hasn't really performed in a big moment. I think we look at him, his international career with Belgium, and if you look at collectively, there's been many Belgian stars in the Premier League which haven't really delivered for Belgian international moments. So I'm saying, so I think that's what kind of hampers KDB's kind of overall glory in terms of what we think of him as a complete player. But in the Premier League, he's like, assists, goals, Premier League titles. I think he's won 5, if I'm correct, or maybe 4. But for me, with that sort of record and his portfolio that he has right now, I don't think you can say that he's not in the conversation to be one of the greatest Premier League players of all time. I think he's definitely top 3. And right now, for me, looking back on it, what he's done for the last, 6 years at City, maybe more, for me, he's definitely given that sort of a discussion to be the greatest Premier League footballer of all time.
So if you were to do a list right now, would you put KDB number one, or is there someone else in the conversation for you that you say you wouldn't give it to him just yet, that you feel like this player is still ahead of him?
I would say this. Give your flowers to people while she can do and they play.
I mean, look, you know what? Another honorable mention, for me personally, I don't know if anyone kind of echoes this, but for me, I think David Silva, for me, what we saw of him from 2011 to when he left.
Next!
Get that guy.
He was a part of that great city call in the midfield, which won many Premier League titles, which was competing. Obviously, he never got to the Holy Grail winning the Champions League, but he was a part of that city identity, which kind of built the city team.
He was a very good player,
assists and scoring goals. Yeah. Maybe not to the same volume as KDB. Maybe never had the same sort of goal scoring moments as KDB, but you know, obviously we all know KDB is a great striker in the football. He scores many great goals. Yes, Damso does have that sort of moments, but in terms of his impact for City, what he was able to do, his longevity, the ease where he played the game, for me, he's in that conversation. Not the greatest number one, but I think if we're going to have a conversation of top five, top three, David Silva, for me, in my opinion, is in that conversation. Right. I don't think I'm erroneous.
I hear what you said, right, on David Silva. Yeah. I hope Gabriel can chat soon as well. But then, how can you then look at Yaya and laugh at him when you talk about moments and that growing up on Man City when he arguably scored?
Well, so right. I'm laughing at David Silva more than I am at the Yaya thing because...
All right, fair enough.
No. Richard, stop that. You're just laughing because you want to laugh.
I'm not laughing because I want to laugh. I mean, let's be clear. First of all, you're talking about the greatest midfield of all time. Yeah. I feel like to even be close to the conversation, you need to be, as you said, top three, top five greatest Premier League midfields of all time. I don't think David Silva is that. I think I can name seven midfielders off the top of my head that I'll put.
Name them.
So obviously KDB, Lampard, Scholes, Patrick Vieira, Fabregas, and Yaya Toure. All six of them are great.
Wait, so why is Fabregas ahead of David Silva? In what way?
I can answer that one.
No, okay. Okay, Gabriel, go on. In what way? Give me a detailed breakdown on how Cesc Fabregas has a greater Premier League career than David Silva. I want
to
hear it.
I can answer it with one question to you. What does David Silva have that Fabregas doesn't?
That was never my argument. I've got an answer to it though.
Okay, cool. If you look at, obviously, eye test and stats, for me to be considered one of the best, you have to have both. Mm-hmm. You have to have passed both the eye test and have the stats.
Well, I can't say him to David Silva as well, by the way. So that just dropped David Silva to 8 now.
Forget this guy. You got to pass the eye test and have the stats. So you got your KDBs or whatever. But with Fabregas, what people don't realise is Fabregas is the second all-time assist leader in the Premier League. And he left the Premier League for 4 or 5 years, came back, I won't say the tail end of his career, but towards the tail end of his career. He had maybe, 3 or 4 good years at Chelsea before Leg went. If Fabregas had stayed here his whole career, Fabregas would be the all-time Premier League assist leader, and it wouldn't even be close. So my thing is that, okay, look, David Silva was an integral member to what City was doing. But I don't think you can take David Silva, take him out of City and put him into Chelsea and do what Fabregas was doing. But you can take Fabregas out of Chelsea and put him into City.
I think you can. I missed some points regarding Fabregas' assist record. I hear that. But what would be in a better case when you said right now? If you said, if you take David Silva out of City team and put an Arsenal team, which Fabregas played for in his early years, fair enough, I can agree with you. But that Chelsea team that Fabregas played for, Silva could have done the job. That was a very good Chelsea team, which won Premier League titles.
This is not a rage, but I can't lie to you. I'm not seeing David Silva do anything. I'm not seeing David Silva do anything Bernardo Silva can't. And that says
that's
something.
Not my case.
I'm saying there's other midfielders. I think Fabregas is a unique type of midfielder. I think
you bring Bernardo Silva, who realistically is a wide midfielder. You can look at him as a winger. Support. So I'm saying, technically, I don't even know where you're going with this. Gabriel, you're saying before, I hear you're saying.
I'm saying there's more David Silva than there is Fabregas.
Okay.
And I think Fabregas is a unique midfield. And I think the only thing David Silva has in terms of ability over Fabregas is probably, I'll give you a better dribbler. But I think when you talk about the job of the midfield in terms of controlling the game and the range of passing and being able to take over a game, I think Fabregas has all those things over David Silva. I think David Silva, and I'm not going to say he's lucky to play in the era in the system that he did, because he did do his part. But I do feel like there were times where there's always someone better than him in the midfield, whether it was Yaya Touré earlier on and KDB later. I think what Fabregas was able to, even though they never won anything, but the thing is, Arsenal saw losers after like 2004 anyways, so no one was winning anything in that team. I think what Fabregas was able to do at the age of 19 till he first of all left, then he comes back, and then you saw what he did in the Chelsea team, especially his first season, 18 Premier League assists, which he should have had a lot more. And then he goes on. And I remember even at the beginning of the second time we won the Premier League, they were trying to leave Fabregas out when they were playing Oscar in there. When we put Fabregas in, then we even started dominating even more, where we did a 4-3-4 with Costa, Hazard and Fabregas as the third forward. So no disrespect to David Silva. I think I can squeeze him into my top 10 Premier League midfielders of all time.
Do you ever see it or something?
I think Richard makes a good point on that. Is that when one thing I think I hold against David Silva is that he was never the guy at City. And it's like, it's always easy to say, oh, anyone can go City and succeed. But that's not always the case. But my thing is that he was never the guy. He was never the guy they looked to and be like, take us over the line, for example. Yaya Touré, KDB, even Aguero at times. You look back to their first Premier League.
I know.
But what I'm saying is that they're not looking to David Silva. Okay, even if you want to take Aguero out, because Yaya Touré to KDB and David Silva, that whole timeline overlaps here. David Silva goes across both timelines. David Silva at no point was the guy that they looked to. And that's why I'm holding
it. I think you're wrong there, bro. When C won the league title in 2012, David Silva was more of a key component and key influential figure than Yaya Touré.
No, he wasn't, bro.
I remember that scene very well.
Yaya Touré
was a key component and influential figure than Yaya Touré. Yaya Touré took over the next season, 12-13 to 15-16. Yaya Touré was the guy. But when David Silva first came to City, 10-11, 11-12, 13 seasons, that's the season they first won the Premier title.
He was more influential.
Okay. You can't ignore that first City title that David Silva had no great impact in that
Nobody
team.
Nobody said that.
For me, apart from Aguero, David Silva was probably the third most impactful and most influential player in that City team, apart from Aguero and company. I say it with fat and chest. You can't say Yaya Touré.
More influential and more impactful
than Yaya Touré. You can't say that. 2011, 2012, when City won the first Premier title, you cannot say that Yaya Touré was more influential, had more of an important presence
in that title-winning championship campaign.
You can't say that, bro.
I mean, just to compete with David Silva point, because we're all on the same page except for Kodjo. Kodjo thinks David Silva is a top five Premier League midfielder of all time and deserves to be in that conversation for greatest midfielder of all time. Everyone else is laughing off, which brings me to you, Gabriel. So first of all, do you believe KDB is number one Premier League in history?
He's there. He's in the conversation. Definitely, I think he's in the conversation. It's hard to say that he's not number one because of everything he's done in this league. Like, he's actually insane. He has. Obviously, I'm a big stats merchant. Along with the eye test, KDB passes both with ease. Just look at his return against Newcastle. Yeah, guy was on the pitch for 22 minutes, turned that game around for them. That was a game they were going to lose, and then everyone's under the impression that KDB isn't the heartbeat of City. That Rodri's the heartbeat. This, that, and the other. And cool, Rodri is a key cog, but when you have KDB, you have license to do anything as Man City. There's nothing that is without reach for you guys. You can literally do anything with that guy. Put him out wide, put him in the middle, play him false nine. Like, there's no limits to his game. Like, he's insane. So I think when you look at how centre midfielders have changed from the early 2000s till now, KDB is what maybe Lampard was like early stages of KDB without the assist, as many assists as KDB gets. Because KDB will give you 16 assists, but it will also give you 15 goals. Whereas back in the day, Lampard will give you the 22 goals, maybe the 8 assists, 9 assists. So you have those are nice stats. But then when you're getting 15 goals, 16 assists, and the goals that you're getting from KDB are always key goals. Like, I don't know why it's always key goals for him. It's not oh, at the tail end of a 4-0 route, like he's scoring the fourth goal. So he's getting the one or the two. Like, I'll give last season, for example, we played City home and away. KDB was the key, home and away. Scored the first, home and away. He killed us both times last year. And I'm watching and I'm thinking, is there going to be another KDB? Like, and he was, always... Go on.
Before I finish. No, I was going to say, because it's crazy you said that, because I agree with you in terms of the key goals for him. Because I think one of the arguments that people try to use against KDB is that if you take him out of the City team, City can still go on to do what they do. And they'll still be able to win Premier League, which I think only one Premier League that City have won, I feel like they could have won without him, which I can't remember that one off the top of my head. But at the same time, the league that Leicester won.
I think probably the Pellegrini one, because I don't think anybody was getting closer to
the Pellegrini one. Well,
I don't think it was definitely Pellegrini.
It's fair, bro.
It wasn't, I see, a Pellegrini one. I think bro, it was.
No, I think the season you're talking about, I think you're talking about the 1890 season.
I think it was one of those seasons. But at the same time, I think if KDB wasn't injured the season that Leicester won the league, I think Man City would have won it that year anyway. So he evens himself out anyways.
If KDB doesn't go, then I think
Leicester don't win that thing. I think he swings the points difference.
That was his first season, though. He wasn't that one.
He was that. I won't bring up what he did at Wolves because it's relevant to the conversation. But I think he was that kind of talent. And obviously I don't regret that Chelsea saw him. Kind of player if he didn't let him go to Wolves to develop his craft. But I think, obviously, back to the argument: do I have KDB as number one? I think yes, I do. But the only thing I would say is I don't have it undoubtedly number one. I do think. It's only one person that I do think. I would say just one person, but I think if there is one person I feel like I can make the best compelling case to go against him is the Frank Lampard argument, because I think Lampard being a goal scoring midfielder was working against him, but I think his managerial career has literally killed his PR of the way people look at Frank Lampard, because I think him being a goal scoring midfielder is, it used to annoy me when Bruno 2020 and Dele Alli 2017, because they were scoring goals as a midfielder, they say he's playing like Frank Lampard, which I felt like was just unbelievable. I think Frank Lampard was also KDB before KDB in terms of total package as a midfielder, someone that can pass, run a game. And I'm not going to then say Frank Lampard's in the category of Iniesta and Xavi or whatever, but the same hypothesis, I think you swap them, I don't think those guys would be able to do what Frank Lampard did at Chelsea. Because he also gives you the stats to go along with it. I mean, I love DJ Drogba and stuff like that, but then DJ Drogba had quite a few injuries, and then because of that, he had to make a few appearances off the bench. Lampard had to be the one to carry Chelsea through plenty of time. I mean, 04, 05, when he was top three the Ballon d'Or, if I'm correct, and made UEFA Team of the Year, and then obviously...
Yeah, I think that's 2005.
Five seasons of scoring 20-plus goals. I think he had over 100 Premier League goals and 100 Premier League assists. And then obviously you speak of that magical 2009-10 season. So I think Lampard gets a lot of disrespect for just being a late man in the box poacher. Obviously, I can still hear arguments for players like Paul Scholes to a lesser degree. And obviously, when you talk about Roy Keane as well, even though I don't think he's in the conversation. Oh, Roy Keane over David Silva. Even though I don't think he's in the conversation, I do think, obviously, to be able to captain 7 Premier League and be an integral part, I think his career was absolutely up there as well. I mean, one player I think, I don't know why he's in the conversation, is Steven Gerrard, because I believe to be in those kind of conversations,
your career has to be gold. That's
disrespectful.
I don't think it is.
That is so disrespectful to Steven Gerrard.
The more I think about it...
No,
is it the same way I said I can just squeeze David Silva in? If I really think about it, I'm not sure I can squeeze Gerrard into my top 10.
Wait, it's not that, bro. David Silva is not disrespectful.
Let me explain why.
Gabriel, it's not
that. And we move on from David Silva. Let's go for it.
Let me bounce off what Richard's saying. So, you know the original Ronaldo. I can say if I made a world 11, in terms of I can put him in, because he's one of the greatest goal scorers. He's got 2 World Cups, I believe, as well. Whatever, he's got a great international record. I can't put him in a UEFA Team of the Year all time because he's never won that competition. Gerrard, potentially you can look at it to say he's one of the greatest midfielders of all time, but he can't be one of the greatest Premier League midfielders, because one of the things that's missing, ultimately the greatest, or in that conversation, is the trophy. And when one of your lasting memories is you let it slip, that adds to it. The reason why Lampard actually gets more criticism now is because one of the lasting memories is actually him being a manager rather than him being a player. And unfortunately, one of Gerrard's lasting memories is the fact that he let it slip.
I'll be honest, yeah? And this is going to sound outrageous, I'll be honest. You know who Gerrard should be? Gerrard should be, what's it called? The street don't forget type of player. Because you know one of those players are immensely talented, but they didn't
achieve... That's a bit too far.
They didn't achieve a lot in there. Because the thing is that, for me, yeah, is... I agree that Gerrard was immensely talented and stuff, but... When I start talking about the greatest of all times and stuff, I feel like it then becomes less about the talent and more about what you've done in career. And I'm not going to listen to the argument of because of the teams he had, he was never able to win the Premier
League. But that's a valid point.
No, shall I tell you why it's not? For 2 reasons. One, because he could have just left if he wanted to and go and join a team and improve your career. Or 2, because it's the whole thing. Obviously, we're not talking about basketball, but I'm just saying it's the whole thing with basketball. KD leaving OKC to go to Golden State, win those 2 rings, makes him eligible to be in those top 20 players of all time without the ring.
But look at how he's spoken
back to football. And this, but even my second argument, anyways, is he had the chance to actually go on and win it, and he is
2 times, in my opinion.
And he slipped
when United won the three-peat. Liverpool finished what I think 3rd. The only 7 points off United, really, and he'll neck and neck for most of the season.
Acts like he never had very well.
And even again, the most recent one of his career, the 13-14 season, where again. 3-0 against Crystal Palace, you let it slip 3-3. Even against Chelsea, you were 2-0.
This is where we're revising history. All right, cool. The 13-14 one, no one can say anything. They should have won that title. They let it slip against Chelsea.
He started a downfall.
But obviously, you talk about the Palace game or whatever, they had to chase those goals. Obviously, they were 3-0 up and they ended up drawing 3-3. They had to chase the goals because they were chasing City's goal difference. But my thing with Gerrard, the 07-08 one, I think that's the one they won at Old Trafford where Torres got Vidic sent off.
Yeah, it was 08-09 season, yeah.
08-09, that's the one where Torres got Vidic sent off. That was that year. Look at who they're competing against. Didn't United go on to win the champs that year as well?
No, that was a pre-season. No,
they won it the year before.
But United went on to the final of the Champions League to face Barcelona.
So United were definitely... best team in the world, the second best team in the world at that point. So that's who they were competing against. You look at Gerrard's time in the Prem. When did Gerrard come into the Prem? I think coming to Prem 96 or it might be 95. United were dominating, then Arsenal were dominating. United, Arsenal, United, Chelsea come into the mix. Where in that, so between 96 to 2005, where do Liverpool fit into that?
I agree. Gerrard credit, because he became a one club man.
What I'm saying is that because of that, bro, again, you, as a player, you always have a choice to leave a team, bro. You're not there by force. Cool.
And I can say the people
have
multiple
reasons why you want to stay.
But my thing is, we look at Gerrard differently if he goes Chelsea in 06.
I know, we're not saying that. We're not saying that. The thing is, Richard,
but he becomes eligible for
his time. He's amazing, but Richard's making a point.
I've got a question. You have to produce.
You have to have the achievements to be in that conversation or be in a top 5 or the greatest midfielder. Do you know what I'm saying?
And you're an Arsenal fan, right?
For me, he's in the conversation, but you can't put him in the top 2, top 3. For me,
I'm going to rebuttal your thing. You're an Arsenal fan, right? You mentioned to me about one player right at the start of this, which is Fabregas. When he went to Chelsea and won the league title, did you look at him different? Or have you just sat here in the past 20 minutes and put him in that top conversation?
What do you mean?
My point is, would I have seen
Fabregas as a top 10?
No. You said if Gerrard had moved to Chelsea, they would have looked at him differently. who would have looked at him differently? If anything, we would have looked at him in a bit of a better light because he's got
that,
elite.
That's what I'm saying. That you
that's what I'm saying.
In a better light. Because he would have won. Because he would have won.
All right, yeah.
So obviously, if he
but to rebut your point, Gabriel, it was not about the talent. It was about what he's done. Because in these conversations, you have to have the achievements. You have to have the portfolio.
I agree with that.
Do you know what I mean?
I'm also saying you need to account who he was going up against.
But then,
you have to account that he was going up.
Yeah, exactly.
And you see the people two man up,
he was going up against were whacking him. Lampard whacked him. Paul Scholes whacked him. And Patrick Vieira whacked him. And that's why all these players are ahead of him in the greatest of all time.
I didn't see enough of Patrick Vieira, but I feel like this invincible.
Patrick Vieira was up there as well.
Wait, Gabe,
I think Patrick Vieira is up
there. Where do you rank Steven Gerrard in your Premier League all time greats midfielders? Where does he fit in your estimation?
He's definitely in the top 10.
I agree that top ten is doable.
He's definitely in the top ten. I don't know where he sits in that top ten. You know what, I don't think he's like top three, but he's in my top ten.
Go through the list.
No, I agree. Top ten is reasonable. Fine. So I will never get angry at someone, or I will never look at someone weirdly if they say Steven Gerrard is in the top ten. He'll talk to me for the whole time in the Premier League.
Okay, wait, hold on.
You put him in the top ten because if you don't, that's disrespectful.
Okay, we're gonna go through the list so we can close it. So, is he greater than KDB? I don't think anyone will say that. Is he greater than? Oh, cool. Is he greater than? Patrick Vieira, I don't think anyone will say that. Is he greater than Fabregas? No. Is he greater than... Is he even greater than Roy Keane? I wouldn't say so.
No.
Is he greater
than... The thing is with Roy Keane,
is no, he greater the thing than... is Roy Keane's more defensive.
Roy Keane's... Roy Keane's more defensive and intangibles. The intangibles, so when you talk about intangibles, you're talking about the leadership and whatnot that he brings onto the pitch. If we're talking about just ability and what you can do on the pitch, Roy Keane isn't in the same room as Gerrard.
Yeah,
I agree with you. But I'm the
conversation. And for me, they're different type of midfielders, anyways. So it's kind of a bit unfair to kind of compare them.
Discuss them.
You can put him in top. I think this is the thing. It's
he might be tenth. Awesome.
Obviously, like I said, on the talent, the ability side, he would probably be more closer into the top five. But when you drop it back a bit and you look at the package of right, okay, we're not just looking at you from a skill standpoint, because from a skill standpoint, we can say Neymar's arguably the greatest players we've ever seen. But then when you really break it down, when he moved to PSG, what he wanted to move to, it didn't work out. So his career didn't actually pan out there as meant to. Similar with Steven Gerrard, from a skill standpoint, one of the greatest. The career still leaves a little smidge on because he stayed so long in one particular league and unfortunately couldn't get over that. And then, to make it even worse, he leaves a few years later, arguably, the hardest competition is Man City that we've ever seen. Liverpool go on to win the league title and then go back-to-back where they challenge them and properly challenge them as well.
I don't know. It's a bit difficult because, first of all, I don't agree with the name of comparison because, as I say,
in terms of a total...
I think Neymar has had an elite career. He could have underachieved because of what he was just, but I think,
He underachieved.
The underachieving thing.
What did you expect from Neymar?
He won a Liga.
Okay. The Champions League that he won in 2015, But you had Messi, the greatest footballer to ever exist.
And he was better than Messi in the Champions League.
Was the greatest striker in the world.
He was better than Messi.
You can't say for me that Neymar was the sole reason which pinpointed Barca to win the Champions League. You can't say that. So for me, it was the greatest striker ever. It was shared. You had two.
Neymar wasn't there.
You won third. This ain't like Michael Jordan when he took the balls on the free pick. You can't compare that. For me, as a Brazilian, and I have to put this there because this we have to be real. We talk about this all the time outside the pod as well. As a Brazilian, if you cannot lead your team, to any sort of significant success in the international stage, you cannot be, for me, in a discussion of saying your career has been legendary.
2014, he gets injured.
No, you can't.
They're going to win that World Cup.
He's never won a Copa America.
I'm about to fact check that now, by the way.
They never won the Copa America. Brazil.
The 2019 one that they won. He weren't there. He was injured.
Under Neymar.
He was injured the 2019 one.
Okay, Gabriel, I'll let you know. Go on.
But besides the 20... Yeah, actually, no, I'll let you take it.
All right, 2014 World Cup. He's back. He's nearly paralyzed at the 2014 World Cup. Yeah, 2018 World Cup. Enough, Brazil. He wasn't that good at the 2018 World Cup. He was all right. Neymar standard. This last World Cup, see what he done to Croatia.
Fred,
if he doesn't come up with that injury, he's probably leaving with another goal against Croatia.
But the fact is that Brazil, okay, this will be some buts, all hypotheticals. But what I'm saying is that they lost to Croatia, which is an upset.
Pitch at this point.
2018, you got knocked out.
He left the pitch 1-0 up.
Fair enough. Great. But cool. That's great. But I'm saying,
2018, look over his career,
even the Copa America, like you got to take into account, Brazil have never won the Copa America with Neymar. And he's played in 5 Copa Americas.
Oh, because they're not going
to play, man. You know how many Copa Americas they made just to get Messi one? At some points, man.
I'm just saying, in general,
he was great at Barca, but you can't say he was the single reason
he was
why Barca
PSG,
achieved the great success. You can't say that. And the PSG, that's a given. Going to Ligue 1 and winning 4 or 5 Ligue 1 titles does not lead you to having a career.
I promise you, it's not easy to make.
I'm guessing you're gonna say if you had to compare Dino to Neymar, you take Dino's career over Neymar's.
Yeah.
And that is where
that's insane.
That is where this debate ends.
He's a more professional footballer than Ronaldinho, technically. I'll say that. I think footballing wise,
that's irrelevant. I think Ronaldinho got everyone off topic.
Yeah, yeah.
But for me, Ronaldinho had a great career. Do you know why?
We got to revisit this topic one day.
Where he was the best player in that team. And he won league titles. He won a Champions League. And 2003 was the best player, not the best player actually, but was a key component for Brazil winning the World Cup against Germany in South Korea, Japan, alongside R9. But he won the World Cup. He lifted that amazing trophy. He hosted
who did you say he played alongside? R9. I'm pretty sure Rivaldo was there as well. So that what?
Yeah,
two other Ballon d'Or winners.
Guess what? He won the World Cup.
You see when he was talking about Barca and the Champions League, he tried to say he was playing with Messi and Suarez. But when he's talking about the Brazil World Cup, he don't want to mention nothing about R9 and the rest of the crew that was playing with. But it's fine.
Don't do that. We're going to have to revisit this conversation. I don't want to get off topic. Because let's be very real here, yeah? Let's be very real here. Cool. In the Champions League, yeah, Neymar came to Barcelona 13-14, 14-15, 15-16, since he had 4 years, right? Only one of those 4 years where Barca were really great and won the Champions League, yeah? Since then, they didn't get to a final.
Neymar was the best player in that Barcelona Champions League campaign.
It's once every 4 years. It's hard to win the World Cup because once every 4 years. Do you know what I'm saying? So the fact that Ronaldinho capitalized on the World Cup, where Neymar was competing in the competition every year and only went once, do you know what I'm saying? For me, personally, you can't take that and say he was the best player in the Champions League campaign.
That's what you keep missing out. Barcelona do not win it without Neymar. And besides, international football and club football are a bit different because those times, Barcelona were by far the best country.
What makes my argument stronger as well, Ronaldinho won the Champions League with Barca, and that Barca team wasn't as good as the one that Neymar won it with.
Let's be very real.
That's because probably Barca 2-1-0-1.
But they still won it. Something that happened fair calls. Let's not say Arsenal didn't win it. You're an Arsenal fan. You're going to say that. And yeah, on the IES, Arsenal were the better team on that night. And they should have won it. But they flopped. They bottled it. The fact is Ronaldinho won the Champions League. He won it. In the Barca team, which wasn't that great. It wasn't. If Arsenal were better than them, and Arsenal, that team was a good team, but it wasn't as good as the invincible team. That for me makes my argument even more stronger. That for me, Ronaldinho, for me, is a greater Brazilian legend than Neymar. I don't hear this talk about Neymar being the best.
We'll have a proper discussion about it.
Obviously, just to end off the football section, because we still have another competition that's going on, which is the AFCON. And as you can see, we've got, apart from Abbas, the rest of us are African. Like, me and, Gabriel are Nigerians, and then Cole George from the Egg country, so...
Obviously, you guys,
we have to talk about it. I just want to ask you guys, what result was more disappointing yesterday? Was it the Ghana result, aka the egg result, or the best Nigerian jollof? What? I know I'm starting Ghana, I'm sorry. Anyways, what result was more disappointing, Ghana result or Nigeria result?
I'll start off, I'll be quick with this, yeah? I think the Nigeria result was more disappointing, and this is non-biased taking, right? Do you know why? Because let's be very real here, yeah? Nigeria have a good team, honestly a very good team, but you have a star set of players, you have good attack, you have high expectations to go deep in the tournament. Ghana haven't been good since 2015, right? It's been 9 years since we've really been relevant as powerhouses in African football. So there wasn't really any expectation for Ghana in this tournament, let's be very real, compared to Nigeria, right? So Ghana losing, yes, it's embarrassing because it's Cape Verde. But if you really be honest, if you look at the Ghana team, bro, like, it's not a good team. We even played Kudus. Kudus didn't even play. Do you know what I'm saying? What's that guy who played for Brighton? He switched over from England. What's his name again? The young boy. What's his name?
Lempty.
He didn't even play. He didn't even get selected. So for me personally, non-biased aside, the Nigeria result, it wasn't a bad result of Nigeria doing Equatorial Guinea, in my opinion, because...
It's a terrible result.
Yeah, it's Equatorial Guinea, but Nigeria didn't lose. But I feel like because Nigeria have high expectations, they're the biggest stars. There's a bit more of a confidence with Nigeria heading into AFCON, yeah, compared to Ghana. Let's be very real. Let's be very honest here. I think the Nigeria result is more worse than the Ghana result. I would even say for me, the Egypt drawing 2-2 yesterday was more of the bigger shock compared to Ghana and even Nigeria's results, in my opinion.
Do you know, as the only person that has no bias in this, I have to say Ghana's result has to be worse because they lost. Nigeria, at least, let me break this. Nigeria at least picked up a point.
Yep.
Ghana lost. Like you said, Egypt shockingly draw 2-2. You have a chance then to win one of the two games that you're expected to win in that group and go top, and then probably, if anything, drop a bit more pressure. Because if you lose, you're in that situation where it's like, okay, cool, we play Egypt. We might beat them, we might not. They've drawn to Mozambique. How are we going to play? Whereas if you beat Cape Verde and then on top of that, you lost in the 97th minute, if I'm not wrong, like right at the end?
Was it 92nd minute?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's, sorry, Egypt equalised at 97th. But yeah, you lost right at the end. That's a stinger even more. The fact that you couldn't even see out the draw. Whereas Nigeria, look, let's be honest, Osimhen's there, isn't it? So they'll be able to do what they need to do. I've seen a few bits that, look, they have a lot of forwards. They don't play. But it looks like, based off what I've read anyway, because obviously I don't know much about African football like that, they set up in a decent way compared to what some of the other rubbish like Nigerian fans have seen and stuff like that. So, if anything, I'd probably say Ghana's was worse because you lost a game that you were probably meant to win. Ivory Coast won, so obviously Nigeria's looking at it like, okay, we might finish second type of thing in this group, but they have enough talent to get out of that, and they drew. At the end of the day, that's the thing. They still drew, that they managed to get a point, whereas Ghana lost.
And I'm backing off like a point as well. Just because you're backing off a best point as well, you got to forget, this was probably the easiest game of the group as well. And I saw a stat that said that Ghana haven't won a game in AFCON since 2019. So if this is your easiest group and you can't win this one, and now you've got Egypt coming up on Thursday, who've now drawn and they've now a bit more desperate as well, you go on to lose that game and it's all, if you get what I mean. So, I mean, I don't have much, because I think Abbas, with Nigeria, as you said, you get a draw, you win one of your next two, you're more or less free. If Ghana don't win the next game, or if they lose the next game, I feel like it's all for them.
But the question is, the question isn't, what result has bigger implications for, you know, for a team going through? That's not the question. We're talking about what's more of a shocking result. Ghana, for me personally, yeah, like as a Ghanaian, I have no
implications
in this AFCON. We lost to Comoros 2 years ago. Like, and you guys are acting like, oh, Ghana's Cape Verde is worse. Like, Comoros, no offense to them, but they never qualified prior to the 2022 AFCON. Do you know what I'm saying? They never, in recent memory anyways. Do you know what I'm saying? So, for me, Ghana losing to Cape Verde wasn't... In the manner we lost, yes, shocking. Do you know what I'm saying? In that late stage. But compare Ghana's reputation to Egypt, a lot of people say Egypt are favourites. A lot of people say Nigeria are favourites ahead of Ghana. So, the fact that both those teams dropped points from winning positions, yeah. No, sure, Nigeria, you guys obviously went behind. Fair enough. But the fact that a lot of people expect Nigeria to win that game against Equatorial Guinea, yeah, let's be very real, I thought it was a big result. But Ghana, you didn't know what was going to happen. Ghana losing yesterday wasn't a surprise. Everyone's just going by heavy on Twitter because it's Ghana. We're a big country. Do you know what I'm saying? In terms of popularity, everyone's just a mocker, especially Nigerians. So let's not say that it was a much more of a bigger shock than Nigeria's result. Fair enough, you didn't. Yes, you man.
No,
didn't
lose. I'd say that Ghana losing was definitely a bigger shock. But in terms of disappointment, for me personally, Nigeria is the bigger disappointment out of Ghana, Nigeria, and Egypt. Purely because of the fact that this was reminiscent back to the last AFCON, even to the World Cup playoffs when we played Ghana home and away. We had chances upon chances upon chances and didn't take them. And that's a scary sign to see that still hasn't been corrected. All right, cool. You have Osimhen, who's the reigning African player of the year, who bagged countless goals last year, who started again in the same form this year. But I don't know what it is, this magic of AFCON. It's like whenever players come to AFCON, forget what you're doing in Europe, forget what you're doing at your club level. Players lose all sense when they come to AFCON, isn't it? And I'm looking, even that one-on-one that Osimhen put wide of the post yesterday, I'm thinking, what on earth are we doing here? Like that, to me personally, us dropping 2 points against Equatorial Guinea last night was more disappointing because we can't be a fool. Like, it's, what's that saying? It's like, oh, things you wouldn't accept in a win, you shouldn't accept. No, things that you wouldn't accept in a loss or whatever, or a draw, you wouldn't accept in a win. And it's these little things that we're not doing correctly, like our midfield just giving away possession all the time. So even though we took a draw, these little things we shouldn't be accepting. We shouldn't be okay with it going forward. And now next game is Ivory Coast. This is the biggest game of the group stages for us anyway. We have to take something from it. If we don't take anything from it, we're in a dangerous and precarious position going into the final game week.
You know what you said about like players missing chances, or when you come to AFCON, all things go out the window. Do you think some of it comes to the fact that these guys, and especially the top players anyway, come from where they're playing in European leagues, where the pitches are a bit more of a higher quality? You then have to change your game a little bit, or maybe adapt to a pitch of a lower quality, and then it's like, wait, the ball might not bubble the same way, or the pass might not come the same way, or you're not running in the same type of stride type of thing.
I definitely think it's a factor, but I also think arrogance is a factor as well.
Yeah,
because you look at the Equatorial Guinea game yesterday. Osimhen's playing in Europe, playing in Champions League, blah blah blah. Their defenders aren't playing at the same level, so you play to the level of them, and that's where the arrogance comes in, because you don't realize you're playing to the level of them. You take it a bit easier. Whereas if this was Champions League group stages and Napoli needed to win, or Napoli needed to score a goal, I'm pretty sure that one-on-one that Osimhen missed yesterday, he's not missing. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, I feel like, yeah, the pitches, the conditions that they're accustomed to in Europe and not having it at AFCON definitely plays a factor. But I think a factor that's not spoken about enough is the arrogance. Because I feel like not just only Nigeria, Ghana, Egypt, like all these other teams, like you've got players, I can't remember the country, but I'll figure it out, I'll find out. The guy plays right back for his club. His team's national top goal scorer. He plays up front for his club, for his country. What is that? That's not where you play. Like, if you practice every day as a right back, but then you come to your nation and they slap you up top because you play in Europe or whatever, arrogance. It's like, what you wouldn't...
Because I think Mourinho used to say, he goes, look, for Nigeria, Mikel, you can be number 10, but for me, you're CDM. Like, it doesn't matter. Exactly. Like, and I used to see him and I was like, yo, like, John Obi can play a bit forward. Why are we not trying it out? And I don't know if it was just maybe because Nigeria didn't have more quality players in that role or what it used to be, but it seemed like he used to be captain there and get that opportunity to play as like the more a more forward player.
The thing is, when John Obi was, when Chelsea bought him, he was a 10. Like, he was a 10. So that one I can still understand a little bit. But obviously, I feel like at that point, when he gets into that 10 role full time, he's the most senior player in the squad. Who's going to tell him that he can't play 10? You know what I'm saying? But that goes back into the arrogance things that I'm talking about. Like, I feel like egos need to be checked a little bit. But how do you check those egos when the coaches aren't making as much money as the players? When the players are playing all over Europe, playing in the best competitions, having the lavish lifestyle, who is that person to tell them to do X, Y, Z? You know what I'm saying? So it's easier said than done. But like I said, if you want to have that successful culture, you've got to be able to rein those kind of behaviours in. So that's why I say anyway that Nigeria is more disappointing because it was just a very disappointing result.
Yeah, I said I do think the obviously the Ghanaian one is, but I think I agree with every single point they do have there, and I do think, as you mentioned, the ego thing is definitely a big thing when it comes to AFCON. But I think we always talk about how, like, and I think up to recent when Sky Sports picked up in terms of the coverage of AFCON and things like that. But then I think Africa as a whole needs to do better with competition as well for the outsiders to start taking it in a bit more. And that's when you talk about the quality, and then you talk about, because like, the egos that you see maybe with Nigeria having and stuff, not to say you want to see in Europe, but it's always probably always be to a lesser degree. You won't see Soren bring Trent into thing and you start putting him a striker because of, like, you got him coming. And I understand why they have to do it sometimes because the talent level might not be as that high, but as I said, we just have to do better in it. So, but yeah, that is...
We'll see our games too, though.
We're just going to take a quick break and we're going to be back with our basketball section. So see you guys in 2 seconds. So we're back and we're going to obviously be discussing the NBA. It's been a very, very up and down season for us. Lakers fans, Golden State fans, Suns fans. Who else has been stinking up that shouldn't be stinking up? I can't say Mets because obviously Jar's not there. But come to look of it, I think it just might be us three. Obviously, we've got no Suns fans here. But yeah, so obviously I'm going to ask the question, who do you think have been a bigger disappointment between the Suns, the Lakers and the Golden State? Because obviously coming into the season, you've got KD, who a lot of people still say is a top 10 player in the league. He formed a big three with Devin Booker and Bradley Beal, even though Bradley Beal can't play because his back is always hurting. And you've got the Lakers, who made the conference finals last season, and then obviously you signed Austin Reeves, you talk about a big three of him, and then AD is playing at an all-star level on an MVP level, especially on defense, and they're like two games below 500. And then you talk about Golden State, a team that have dominated a decade of winning like four rings, and have been one of the best organizations in recent times. And all of these teams now seem to struggle, whereas in with LeBron, Steph, and KD being your best players, which I don't think anyone could have foreseen coming to this extent. So that's why I asked the question to you guys. Who do you think have been the biggest disappointment between Golden State Warriors and the Suns?
It's a tough one. Because I think it boils down to two teams here. The Lakers and Warriors. Now, with the Warriors here, you can make a case for them being the biggest disappointment. Because obviously you have Steph Curry, you have Clay, you have Draymond. You have Chris Paul. So you have four Hall of Famers in your team, yeah? Which have had great careers. None have really fallen off, maybe apart from Draymond, but you have four Hall of Famers in your team. You know, you're still having Steph Curry playing at an exceptional level. We were champions 2 years ago. Them obviously being under 500, I think right now, I think three games under 500, being, I think, 11th in the Western Conference.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's very, very bad. Because let's be real, I don't think we expect the Warriors to be a championship contender, but you expect the Warriors to be comfortably in the playoff rankings within 57. That's doable. 57, I think that's okay. That's where you expect the Warriors to be. But to be 11th, three games under 500, to have this sort of discontinuation in your team, the situation with Draymond, which obviously has happened in previous years when they were winning, but the fact that it's kind of taken a downward spiral effect, and right now there's talks of, you know, kind of imploding. You know, training everyone. Do you know what I'm saying? I think you've got to look at, say, the Warriors this season has been more of a disappointment in that sense. But obviously, being a Lakers fan, I have high expectations for my beloved team. And I think what the Lakers achieved last season and what they kind of did in the offseason and their plan was to kind of keep them together and have continuity with this sort of group of players. And the fact that a lot of people talking to the Lakers to potentially have an outside chance of reaching the conference finals again this postseason. There was a lot of talk about that, do you know what I'm saying? And the fact that Lakers, again, would bring the same core, which took us to the conference finals, which did well. The fact that right now they're underachieving, they're two games under 500, it's a bit of a disappointment. And the fact that, obviously, you have your two best players, LeBron James and Anthony Davis, which have been playing well. They've been balling. They've been phenomenal. And guess what? As well, they played the majority of the games. I think between AD and LeBron, I think they've only missed 3 games combined. So our two star players, which have been playing great, have only missed 3 games combined, and we're still taking under 500, and we are 10th in the Western Conference. I think it's beyond expectations that the Lakers realistically should be a team which is around 4th to 6th. That's the expectation that we all had for this season. Be to 4th to 6th, have a good chance of getting a good playoff seed, and have a good run potential of making the Western Conference again. Both teams, I don't think, had real aspirations to win the title, but also have deep playoff runs. And right now, both teams are failing with that ambition, with that aspiration. If I have to pick, I'll probably say the Lakers, because I think you had the same core. You actually got better in the way you added Torian Prince, which I think for me, the last stretch of games, he's been a bit disappointing. But I think for all this season, I think he's been quite good. I think he's contributed quite well. Obviously, you know, you added Gabe Vincent, he's been injured for the majority of the season. So I can't really kind of talk about him in real depth because he's been out. But in terms of the team you have, a lot of people say the Lakers team is better than the Warriors team. And the fact that we're kind of in a similar position to the Warriors, we're only one seed ahead of them. I think the Lakers overall have had a worse season so far compared to the Golden State Warriors.
I think I agree, but not for all of the reasons you said. So as a Warriors fan, this was predictable, the way we've been playing. And Richard can tell you, I am anti-Steve Kerr, have been for like the last 16 months or so. I am so anti-Steve. Say that again?
I said, which is outrageous, by the way.
No. Because like I said earlier when we were talking about football, what you wouldn't accept in a win, in a win, you shouldn't accept in a loss. You know what I'm saying? And some of the decisions that Steve Kerr has made is absolutely mind-boggling. It makes no sense. Even the development of the young players that we have, he's not doing a great job at that. Okay, you look at Steph, yeah? Steph's 35. Yeah. Klay and Draymond, 31, 32, both.
Yeah. Steph,
LeBron has warped all of our minds into thinking still being that great at that age is normal. Even what Steph has done at his age isn't normal. Like, we shouldn't be relying on Steph at this point to be the guy that lifts us out of everything, that we expect Steph to still be carrying us like it's 2014. He's not a young man. He's actually 35 years old. Like, that's not normal.
Yeah.
And I feel like this has been, for the Warriors anyway, this has stemmed since last year, since the punch with Jordan, Paul and Draymond.
Yeah.
You have to remember, we were coming off the back of winning the title, yeah? So coming into that offseason, we were defending champs, and all of that chemistry that was built was snapped in a second from that punch. And the fact that the organization, which, let's be frank, is Steve Kerr and Bob Myers at the time when he was our GM, allowed Draymond to come to ring night, set the precedent and the tone for the whole of last season. And that has followed us into this season. Because you have to remember, we traded JP and got Chris Paul. So we traded a 26-year-old for a 38-year-old. Thinking about that. JP was meant to be, in my eyes, the heir apparent to Steph. And that's not to say that he was going to have the same kind of career, but he was supposed to take the load off Steph. And this is where I say the development aspect comes into it. Was if you watch JP the year we won the championship, he was immense for us. Bearing in mind, Steph missed...
He was starting the point guard in the playoffs as well.
Yeah.
Was great. The year he got the championship, he was really good.
Exactly. Steph missed a large chunk of that season through injury. So I felt like the coaching and everything was great on JP. But then you bring it into the next season, and maybe this links into the punch, all of that. JP was very careless with the ball. And I felt like that's where the coaching aspect failed him, because it was something that we noticed in the championship run, especially against the Celtics. There'll be times where he tries to do something crazy and he loses the ball, loses the handle, whatever, makes a bad pass. But those little things, like I said, that you've accepted in a lot in a win is what you shouldn't have accepted in that win. Because now, when you're doing it in a loss, he'll be like, this is the same thing I was doing when we were winning. those, that's where the coaching aspect comes into it. So that's why I say I've been out for Steve Kerr at 16 months. And then you look at this year now, you look at Jonathan Kuminga, you look at TJD, you look at Pods. Like, I feel like all of our young players that we're supposed to be relying on, the ones that are supposed to be driving the car forward and letting Steph come in full quarter, take over when he needs to, he's not getting the best out of these guys. And that's why you have JK coming out saying, oh, he has no faith in Steve Kerr coaching. Bro, look at what he's doing. He'll take, who was it against? It was 2 games ago. Can't remember who we played 2 games ago, but JK was cooking the majority of the game. Left him on the bench for the last 18 minutes when we were up. I get it. You don't want to be making bare substitutions, this, that, and the other. But anyone with eyes can tell you, Wiggins has been very subpar this season. And even if you're trying to let him get his legs under and this, that, and the other, still, this season we've dropped a 20-point lead. We've dropped 2 18-point leads and I think a 16-point lead all in the second half. Yeah, and this has to be a coaching problem. So this is why I say the Lakers are a bit more disappointing, because as a Warriors fan, we knew this was coming. Or for me anyway, I saw this coming.
And I think I would agree with both you. I think the Lakers have definitely been the biggest disappointment of all three teams, because I think what the Lakers have is how surprising this is, because you talk about the Suns issue. Although you've got the big three, I think two things. I think people have come to terms in modern NBA that big three thing doesn't really work as much, especially when you give away all your defense. And when you've got those guys like what Bradley Beal makes near $40 million a year, Devin Booker's a max contract, KD's a max contract, your role players were never going to be that good. So if one of them is down, that's a big gap that you need to fill in. So I think you could expect this a bit with the Suns, even though they weren't the best one of all three of them. Look at Golden State, the age element. Draymond Green is not the player that he used to be. As you mentioned, you trade away Jordan Poole for Chris Paul, which Chris Paul isn't going to be a starter for you now or in the future. As you said, Steph Curry is getting older, so the way he was used to be able to carry it even 2 years ago, he's not able to do that now. And then you also mentioned, like I said, the development. I mean, Kuminga, because he's there, but even though I don't know if it would have come good anyway, you already put that drop pick on Wiseman, and Wiseman couldn't even get a game no more. So that's just three youngsters off the top of my head that have been poor. And I think, so I think them being not good is, I think there's always been a conversation about like end of a dynasty. Klay Thompson, he's looking for a new contract, but he kind of stinks. Draymond Green, I think he did get his contract, but he takes on the team. But the Lakers, I think the Lakers, well, the disappointing thing is coming into the season is the two things that people always like to complain about when it came to the Lakers, those issues are solved and they've gotten worse, which was the AD issue of whether if AD can stay fit enough to play, and if AD does play, does his motor run high enough to consistently perform game in game. I think those two issues have been fixed. And on the defensive end, I think the guy that can defend the pick and roll, defend the perimeter, the rim, he does it all, even to the point that sometimes I think the Lakers take the piss that they rely too much on him. You give Austin Reeves a new contract. He was now dubbed one of the new big three. Obviously, when Russ left and D'Lo came in, you're not talking about, we now have a point guard with skill, this and that. And you still got LeBron. And as Cole just said, I don't know if it's true they've missed 3 games combined, because I know LeBron just missed another game. I think that's probably due to rest. But you've got your two best players that are playing consistently well. And I was always saying, if you've got those two, the minimum should be able to make the playoffs, regardless of who your coach is, regardless of who your role players are. When you've got AD and LeBron playing at the level they're playing at, you should expect them to make the playoffs. And they are, like, to be fair, and they came into the season, especially coming off winning against the conference finals, they came into the season with title aspirations. After 5 games, I knew this was not a team that was winning no title. So that was out of the red. But then to become a team that might not even make the play-in is something that I could not foresee, which is why I believe the Lakers are definitely the bigger disappointment of all. I think they might be the biggest disappointment in the West overall. Darvin Ham, he could be on board time. Because, I mean, one thing you always talk about, they all said the Laker no winning basketball when they see Laker culture, blah, blah, which I don't 100% we agree to that because...
Well, so what Laker, was that point, sorry? What was that point? What was the point?
Oh, Lakers, they're not winning basketball in terms of, like, when they see it. And I said I can't fully agree with that just because I think Laker fans are very, very extreme when it comes to some of their players. Like, you saw the way they were talking about, what's his name from last season? Lonnie Walker. You see the way they talk about Austin Reeves. When a player is good, they act like he's one of the best players in the NBA. When a player is
oh,
not...
Oh, yeah, I do agree with that. But I feel like they act like he's absolutely dog shit. But I feel like it's more the American Laker fans. I feel like us UK fans are a bit more like we're not reactionary. You know, we take everything as it should be.
Yeah, and even the whole Darvin Ham situation. I mean, the whole put his hands in his pocket thing. I mean,
he's searching deep in his pockets for the answers, brother. That's what he's looking for.
He just keeps looking, and obviously, I think. I won't say the fan runs the organization, but when they start putting pressure on something to happen, half the time, which is probably more than you can say for every other organization, it happens. Like I said, Darvin Ham, he doesn't have much left in this role because you talk about, if you go back to the things of last season, you talk about Patrick Beverley and Russell Westbrook, and everyone's saying, trade them, get them off the team, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. I wish they did, and they got better for it. But then it looks like they're taking a step back, which is why I was always trying to put the point to you guys that as much as the Russ experiment failed, I think the issues with the Lakers was never a Russ problem. And there's a reason why the Lakers only made the playoffs three times in like the last 10 years because they've got bigger issues with the management. When you talk about Jeannie Buss and all those people behind that. I don't know. Or the Rambus and whoever else is there. So, I don't know. It's sad to see because LeBron is coming towards the end of his career. And as I said, the 25 points he would give you 4 years ago, it would not have the same impact as 25 points that he would give you today.
I think personally, I'll be real.
Listen, if Ron wants to, I'll tell you what happens. If Ron wants to win another ring.
I think LeBron should lead the Lakers, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I agree, bro. Come down to San Francisco, bro. Or come up, should I say, to San Francisco. Bro, let's run it back. Him and Steph as a duo, bro. That's three titles in 3 years right there.
But Richard, I think LeBron needs to leave the Lakers. I think he needs to leave the Lakers coming in the season. Or he needs to retire. But whatever,
LeBron needs to leave the team.
What was the contract he just said?
No, but my the reason I say it is because personally, I've had this opinion for maybe the last 2 years now. Because LeBron's contract here, I think personally, in my opinion, if you offload LeBron or he retires, I think financially it gives the Lakers a lot of room to kind of explore the trade market or explore free agency and get a lot of good, useful pieces which can come together and be a very compact, versatile team which can compete on all ends. And that's my personal belief.
Okay, so yes or no? Yeah, okay. I kind of get where you're coming from.
Because I think the window's done with LeBron with another title.
As great as LeBron is, like, in this current situation with the Lakers, I do agree that, as I said, the 25 points you gave 4 years ago, like, he can't escape some criticism. I think he probably has his part to play in all of this as well. I think the issue from a LeBron standpoint, it doesn't make any sense because he's going to have to go somewhere else to get that $40 million anyways. And with the player
he can retire.
He's not retiring when he's at this stage that he's in his career. He's still, like, I don't think his legacy can improve. Even that, I said he's the goal anyway, so he's already reached the pinnacle for me anyways. But he's going to go and get that $40 million somewhere else. And if he goes and get $40 million where he's still the best player on the team, that team isn't winning the ring. So why would you then leave your house? You already got the business over here in LA. I mean, you talk about the bright lights, celebrities, and all this kind of stuff. It doesn't make any sense. And even for the Lakers,
it doesn't make sense because you can do other things on the side.
No, but I'm saying for both standpoints because the guy still loves playing basketball at the end of the day. And there won't be a better situation playing in front of the Lakers fan, which is really want to ring for them. And also, the amount of seats that LeBron fills for the Lakers anyways, and in terms of jersey sales and everything, generates so much revenue for the Lakers anyway. So for both parties, I mean, if you're just talking about from a purely basketball standpoint, I can half agree. I can't even fully agree with you. I can half agree. But when you start affecting
But you've got to remember is that LeBron is a competitor. He plays basketball to win. He plays basketball to achieve greatness.
And okay, but then
if he knows that this Lakers team is shot, like they can't win a title with him, what's the point?
Okay, but where's the realistic situation you can go to?
No, I'm saying if that's the case, he will still play. That's his decision. That's his choice. That's his desires. I don't care personally. I'm not LeBron stan like you.
No, no, but
if he retires, for me, if he retires, I think for me the most logical solution, LeBron, year 31, you've got the most points in NBA history. Many people regard you as the GOAT, especially in this generation. You've won a title for the arguably the greatest franchise in basketball, the Los Angeles Lakers. You've won 4 NBA championships. You've had a star-studded career, yeah, a storied career. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? You're up there. You know what I'm saying? You're 39 years old. You've got 3 kids. Bronny's time's come up now. You can do it in LA. You're in the City of Angels. You're in Tinseltown, the Star City. You can retire. Enjoy the money that you've made. You're a billionaire. You have other assets in your life that you can still become a very important figure in. Do that. LeBron retiring at the end of the season, for me, it shouldn't be something which is out of this world. Even though, for me, he's made no kind of sense of retiring right now. He hasn't made no indication. But if he does retire, we should let it be. Because he's done everything he needs to do. He's won 4 NBA titles. He's broken most of the records. He's won a championship with the Lakers. Do you know what I'm saying? What else does he need to do? What else does he need to do? If he retires, he retires, but it'll be an emotional send-off.
We will miss him dearly.
We will miss him dearly. And I say this with great, profound sincerity. I'll be real with this. You know what I'm saying? We'll miss him dearly. But, bro, there's nothing much for him to do, bro. You know what I'm saying? There's nothing much for him to do. And for me, I love the Lakers more than LeBron. I want my team to be competitive. I want the Lakers to win number 18 before the fucking Celtics. I don't want to... The Celtics right now are the odds favorite to win the NBA title. And for me, I'll say this right here. Yeah. And you can put,
you're welcome.
If the Celtics win a title this year or any year before the, regardless, if the Celtics win the 18 before the Los Angeles Lakers, yeah, I'm off Twitter for the whole two weeks. I don't care. I'm not seeing no Celtics fan talk. I can't do it. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I want the Lakers to be competitive. Yeah. You mentioned an interesting point, Richard. Yeah. You mentioned an interesting point. The Lakers have only. Are you going? The Lakers have only reached the playoffs 3 times in the last 10 years. If you compare that to our greatest rivals, the Boston Celtics, in the last 10 years, the Celtics have made the playoffs every single year. Am I wrong? No, I'm not wrong.
No, you're 100% right.
I think financially, it gives the Lakers more room to explore the trade market and to get free agent signings. Because let's be real, a lot of players want to come to LA. There's a lot of players who want to come to LA, and if you got the room financially, you can make it happen. And obviously, there's more to it as well. You need to have a good basketball mindset. You need to have people which know what they're doing in the high operations of the ball club. And again, that's one thing the Lakers need to improve on, because up there we've been very up and down. Do you know what I'm saying? So there's more things than just LeBron potentially leaving the Lakers that will get the Lakers back to where they should be. But I think LeBron leaving will be a great factor to the Lakers getting back to where they should be, which is being a competitive ball club. But I'm done.
I don't think any other Laker fan will agree with you, because obviously we all love LeBron. And I think obviously, Gabe, we'll just quick sign up. We just need to let you know that Kojo does think Bam J is the GOAT. So maybe this could be coming from a place of hate anyways.
I don't know why you think it's
heretical. It makes a lot of sense. It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, he knows it, bro.
I don't know why you keep coming back on to me at this point. I don't know why today you've been going at me. I don't know what's going on here, but you need to understand. We're disappointing you. You know this. I know you're joking, but yeah, Gabriel, as you know, I want to make it clear. Obviously, this is not heretical, but yes, Michael Jeffrey Jordan, for me, in my eyes, is the greatest basketball player that God has ever created. And number 2 is LeBron Ramon James. And I'll go into a quick explanation why. You guys talk about LeBron winning multiple titles with multiple teams, being a better facilitator, having a great impact on his teammates. I agree with that. I don't dispute that. But for me, at his peak, he was a better scorer, Jordan. At his peak, who's a better defender, Jordan. Who had the greatest moments, Jordan, with the 3-peat. And even many individual moments before he started winning, Jordan. So for me, and let's be real, if Jordan had played the same amount of years,
he couldn't.
As LeBron did.
He couldn't. I mean, Jordan too busy gambling. He couldn't.
Huh? Hey, I'm going to wrap this up, but remember, he did one 3-peat.
We'll talk about this later, because we're running over time.
Yeah.
But Gabriel, I'm going to come back to you in this, because I like this discussion, because I can defend Jordan for days here.
No problem. I mean,
that's the debate we need to have, the Neymar, Dino, and the LeBron. If I didn't know I'm going to be a pod, we might just have a separate video like midweek for this. But those are the two debates we will come and revisit back. But that is all we do have time for today. Thank you for joining us back on the return. Follow us on all social media platforms. I forgot to put the banner down there, but you know, technical difficulty. So yeah, follow us on all social media platforms at outbound_UK, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. I will be back next week with another episode. But until next time, thank you for watching and have a good week.